The Khatra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Khatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really essential topic, getting to the facts about clinical depression. We're going to be drawing on the really comprehensive work in depression, the facts, and also Understanding and Mastering Depression, which are by the duo Jan Scott and Mary Jane Tachi.
And this is, you know, maybe one of the most important deep dives we can do.
I think so, too.
The whole subject is so often clouded by misinformation, by shame, or just a real basic misunderstanding of what clinical depression even is.
Exactly. And this source material, it just cuts right through that noise. We're trying to move beyond this really dangerous idea that depression is some kind of personal failing.
Or weakness, yeah.
Our goal here, and it really mirrors the authors, is to talk about this subject for what the evidence shows it is, a diagnosable and treatable medical illness.
And by grounding everything in, you know, clear evidence-based facts, we hope we can push back against that misinformation and maybe help with those feelings of isolation that so often come with it.
Right. It's about switching out vagueness for clarity.
And shame for empowerment. Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with the authors themselves. This partnership between Professor Jan Scott, a psychiatrist, and Dr. Mary Jane Tachi, a psychologist.
Yeah.
Why is that so valuable?
I think that synergy is probably the single greatest strength of their work. You know, you have Professor Scott, who's this eminent academic, a clinical psychiatrist.
Right.
So she's bringing the foundation, the medical, the biological, the diagnostic side of things. Her expertise covers neurochemistry, genetics, all the formal guidelines doctors use.
And the medication side of things, psychopharmacology.
Exactly. So she's kind of... she's handling the hardware side.
Okay, so she's the hardware. And then Dr. Tachi, the clinical psychologist, she brings in the software expertise.
Precisely. Dr. Tachi specializes in psychotherapy, the psychological angles. She's focused on therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT.
Ah, CBT.
And the, you know, the huge role that our ingrained thought patterns and our feelings and behaviors play in keeping depression going.
So with that combined authority, they don't have to get into that really exhausting debate of, is it medication or therapy?
No, they just sidestep it completely. They present this integrated holistic view, which is, you know, modern best practice.
So they're advocating for a plan that's really tailored to the individual.
To the individual, yes. And that often means a combination of both. You get the medical intervention and the psychological support working together. And that gives you the most complete and, frankly, the most reliable picture of what recovery can look like.
Which brings us right to the book's main point. What's the fundamental shift that Scott and Tachi are really pushing for?
They want the reader to understand, really understand, that depression is a complex syndrome. It's not just being sad for a long time. And crucially, that it is highly treatable. Their whole purpose is to guide the person and their support system through this journey of empowerment.
And it's a resource that's meant for a really wide audience, which feels important. It's not just for doctors.
Oh, not at all. It speaks directly to the person who's going through it, who needs that clarity, but also to the family members who are struggling, you know, asking, how can I help?
And even general healthcare practitioners.
We're often the first port of call. Exactly.
The journey they lay out is just so logical. It starts with defining it. What's clinical depression versus, you know, just a bad mood?
Mm-hmm.
Then it moves into why it happens, that biopsychosocial model, and then finally into the practical steps, treatment, self-management, and how to prevent relapse.
Their mission is just to replace that fear and shame with knowledge and acceptance, and understanding that there is a clear path forward. That's the first step away from feeling like a passive victim.
Right, towards being an active participant in your own health.
Exactly.
Okay, let's get into the details of the illness. We all feel sad. But the authors are so clear that major depressive disorder is fundamentally different. What is that difference?
Well, everyday sadness is usually temporary, right? It's proportional to something that happened, and it doesn't completely stop your life.
That makes sense.
Clinical depression, on the other hand, is this pervasive, chronic, low mood that comes with a whole collection of other symptoms, both physical and psychological. And it lasts for weeks or even months. It's systemic.
And when you say a collection of symptoms, one of the most defining ones they talk about is anhedonia.
Yes, anhedonia. It's a real hallmark of major depression. And it's so much more than just not enjoying your hobbies anymore.
It's deeper than that.
It's the inability to feel pleasure or even to anticipate feeling pleasure from things you used to love. You might also have the severe fatigue, changes in sleep, appetite, trouble concentrating.
And those feelings of worthlessness or guilt.
Yes, this persistent, excessive guilt that's often just totally out of proportion to reality.
And they're also careful to point out it's not a monolith. There are different forms like dysthymia or perinatal depression.
That nuance is so key because the treatment can really vary depending on the type and severity. They stress that the first step is always getting an accurate classification.
Which gets us to the why me question. Mm-hmm. Scott and Tachi used the biopsychosocial model as the cornerstone for understanding why this happens. Why is this so important for getting rid of the stigma?
Because it immediately just throws out the idea that it's a failure of willpower.
Right.
If you only look at one thing, you miss the whole story. Depression is almost never caused by just one factor. It's this complex interaction between all three of those areas.
Okay, let's start with the biological, the hardware.
So the biological part covers your physical vulnerability. This includes genetics. So you can inherit a predisposition, a higher risk, but it's not a guarantee.
It's not your destiny.
Not at all. And more importantly, it covers neurochemistry. We often hear this simplified phrase, a chemical imbalance.
Yeah, that's the common one.
But the authors explain it's more like a subtle dysfunction in the brain's communication systems.
Can you give us an analogy for that? How does that work?
Yeah, think of your brain like a really complex traffic control system.
Yeah.
The neurotransmitters are the traffic signals. So serotonin helps manage emotional stability. Norepinephrine is for focus and energy, and dopamine is for reward and motivation.
Okay.
In depression, that system is like congested. It's broken. The signals are too weak or too strong, or they're just not being processed correctly. The wires get crossed, and that leads to all the physical and cognitive symptoms.
That makes so much sense. Okay, so from the hardware, we move to the psychological element, the software.
Yeah.
This is where the thought patterns come in.
Right. This is cognitive psychology. Depression is often kept alive by what are called cognitive distortions. These are just habits of thought that twist reality in a negative way.
And the main mechanism for that is the negative cognitive triad.
That's the one. It's having a negative view of yourself, I'm worthless, a negative view of the world, life is cruel, and a negative view of the future, it will never get better, all at the same time.
Well, that sounds like a psychological trap. It just feeds itself. How does that connect to the social factors?
The social part, your environment, is often the trigger. These are major life stressors. Things like losing a job, social isolation, a relationship ending, a chronic illness.
So these outside events interact with your biology and your psychology.
Exactly. They interact with your biological vulnerability and that negative psychological software. And that's often what kicks off a depressive episode. The model insists you have to look at the whole picture. The person, their mind, and the world they live in.
And understanding all that complexity is really the key to taking that first step, which is seeking help.
Yes.
The authors frame getting a diagnosis not as a failure, but as this proactive, really courageous step.
And once that diagnosis is clear, then you can actually engage with treatment. On the psychological side, the main one they really dive into is cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT.
Okay, so what's the core idea of CBT that people need to get?
It's all about interconnectedness. Your thoughts influence your feelings influence your behaviors, and then your behaviors circle back and influence your thoughts.
A feedback loop.
It's a powerful loop. And CBT is an active skill-building process that helps you break that cycle. The goal is real, structured change.
But I have a question here. If someone is dealing with severe anhedonia, crushing fatigue, how can they possibly engage in active skill building? It just sounds like a huge mountain to climb when you have zero motivation.
That is a brilliant point, and the authors absolutely address that motivational wall. And that's why the two main techniques work in tandem. First, you have cognitive restructuring. This is where you learn to identify those automatic negative thoughts, the ones coming from that negative triad, and you systematically challenge them. So instead of just accepting the thought, I failed because I'm incompetent, you challenge it.
You look for the evidence.
You look for the evidence.
Right.
And you reframe it. I didn't get the feedback I wanted, but the deadline was tight and we didn't have the resources. You argue back.
So you're teaching your brain to argue against its own negative programming. What about the other technique, behavioral activation?
This one is absolutely key for breaking through that physical paralysis of depression. It involves scheduling positive or meaningful activities no matter how you feel.
Even if you don't want to do them.
Especially if you don't want to do them. The idea is that mood often follows action, not the other way around. So you don't wait to feel motivated to exercise. You just commit to 5 minutes of stretching. And that small action can create just a tiny crack in that depressive wall.
They also mention other therapies like interpersonal therapy and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, but we have to cover the physical treatments too.
Absolutely. Professor Scott does a great job of demystifying the medical treatments. This goes back to fixing that traffic control system in the brain. The book clearly explains the main medication types like SSRIs and SNRIs.
I think for a lot of people, medication is the scariest part.
Mm.
What do the authors say to help with those fears?
They tackle the big fears head on, addiction and personality change. They emphasize that these medicines are not addictive in the way we usually think of addiction.
And the goal isn't to change you.
No, the goal is to restore your normal self, not create a new one. And crucially, they stress the time commitment. These aren't magic pills. They often take 4 to 6 weeks to have their full effect.
That waiting period must be incredibly difficult.
It requires patience, and it requires constant communication with your doctor. They really stress the importance of managing side effects with your doctor, not just stopping the medication on your own, which can be really dangerous.
So working as a team with your physician.
Yes. Don't self-manage based on fear.
Okay, let's shift to long-term wellness. Recovery isn't the finish line. It's the beginning of, well, maintenance. How do Scott and Tachi talk about preventing relapse?
They advocate for active self-care and having a structured relapse prevention plan. Some people call it a WRAP, a Wellness Recovery Action Plan.
And what does that involve?
It involves becoming a student of your own illness. You have to identify your own personal, very specific early warning signs.
What would an early warning sign look like in real life?
It can be incredibly subtle. Maybe your insomnia starts creeping back, or you get more irritable with your family. Maybe you start skipping a daily habit like showering, or you find yourself just endlessly scrolling on your phone.
I see.
Once you know your specific signs, the plan lists immediate proactive steps to take. Call your therapist, go for a walk, schedule a coffee with a friend. You manage the symptoms before they can escalate into a full episode.
This whole framework really does change your perspective. Let's try and distill the biggest takeaways that could fundamentally shift how you think about depression.
Okay, first and foremost, depression is a medical illness, period. Treating it like you would asthma or diabetes, it just completely lifts that burden of self-blame.
That's huge. Number two.
Empowerment through knowledge. By learning the language, anhedonia, CBT, neurotransmitters, the book turns you from a passive sufferer into an informed, active participant in your own recovery.
I like that. And third,
recovery is an active, collaborative process. There's no magic fix. Lasting wellness takes effort. In therapy, with lifestyle changes like sleep and exercise, and by working with your support network.
And finally, a message of hope, I think. The best treatment is personalized.
Yes, exactly. The authors make it so clear that if one thing, whether it's a specific medication or therapy, doesn't work, there are always other evidence-based options to try. There's hope.
The book is full of these really powerful ideas. We should probably highlight a few of the core statements that really stick with you.
Yes, let's do it.
What's the first one that comes to mind?
The one that really targets that psychological trap we talked about earlier. Your thoughts are not facts. The depressed brain is a convincing liar, and a central task of recovery is learning to question its negative messages.
That is the heart of cognitive restructuring right there. It gives you permission to not believe that voice in your head.
It really does. And then there's a crucial one for fighting stigma. Asking for help is not a sign of failure. It is the first and most courageous step in actively managing a complex health condition.
That reframes the whole act of seeking treatment as something powerful, an act of agency.
It does. And the last one really speaks to the overall goal, getting beyond just surviving.
What is?
The goal of treatment is not just the absence of symptoms, but the restoration of joy, purpose, and connection in life. It sets the bar high. The goal is a full, meaningful life.
This book is so clearly meant to be a practical toolkit. How can you apply these ideas right away? For yourself, or maybe for someone you care about?
Well, for an individual, the book gives you a working vocabulary. So instead of just going to your doctor and saying, I feel sad, you can use the clinical language.
Like?
Doctor, I'm experiencing persistent anhedonia, difficulty concentrating, and high levels of guilt. That kind of focused communication leads to a much faster, more accurate treatment plan.
And what about for family and friends? The people who feel so helpless.
There's specific guidance there, too.
Hmm?
First, what not to say. Avoid all the cliches like snap out of it or cheer up.
Right.
And more importantly, it advises offering specific, practical help. So instead of saying, let me know if you need anything, which puts the burden back on the person suffering.
You offer something concrete.
Yes. I will watch your kids for 2 hours on Tuesday. Or I'm bringing dinner over tonight.
That transforms a vague offer into real functional support.
Yeah.
And they talk about supporting the caregiver too, right?
They do. They emphasize that caregivers have to manage their own stress to avoid burnout. And on a broader scale, these insights can help managers or teachers recognize the signs and provide empathetic support, which helps fight stigma everywhere.
This has been an incredibly dense but really important deep dive. What's the one thing about Scott and Tachi's work that stands out most to you?
For me, it's just how seamlessly they integrate everything.
Yeah.
You have this real medical authority on the hard science, the brain chemistry, but it's merged with this deep psychological compassion. The message is that hope for recovery isn't just wishful thinking. It's grounded in solid scientific and clinical evidence.
I completely agree. For me, the power is in that shift from passive suffering, from thinking I am a sad person, to active self-management, to realizing I have a treatable illness. It's an instruction manual for taking your life back. I would really encourage anyone listening to think about creating their own stay well plan based on identifying those personal warning signs.
Yes.
Active management is the path forward. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.